I don't know if you knew this, but the world of podcasting is massive. Hi, I'm Leah. I'm the host of CBC's Podcast Playlist. There is such a constant avalanche of new releases, it can be hard to keep up. Luckily, Podcast Playlist can help. Every week, we deep dive into the podcast world to find the most compelling stories. And every month, we'll give you a sneak peek into the hottest new releases so you can stay ahead. Tune in to Podcast Playlist on CBC Listen and everywhere you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Okay, first of all, Netflix's new show, The Three-Body Problem, is out. There hasn't been a show with this much hype around it for a while. Rami Youssef, the comedian, has a new special. He's about to be everywhere. It has been a busy week in arts and pop culture. The group chat is here. Let's go. I'm Alamin Abdul-Mahmoud, and this is Commotion. We're about to get into some of the biggest stories in arts and entertainment and pop culture this week, starting with a brand new Netflix series that debuted with, I would say, the biggest expectations of any show in the last 6 months, maybe year or so. In order to talk about the show, we have Cassie Cow is here, Rad Simon Pillay is here, and for the first time ever on Commotion, Layla Latif is here. What's good, everybody? How y'all doing? Welcome to Commotion. How's
Hello.
Everyone feeling? Hi, this is
good.
This is exciting for me. You know why it's exciting for me? Because I've been thinking about the three-body problem since the first time I saw a trailer for this thing, and now we get a chance to talk about it. And I understand that there are feelings around this table about the show, and I'm here to maybe argue about those feelings. But first, let me just set it up. Okay, so ever since Game of Thrones wrapped up in 2019, which was an ending that let's just say was dissatisfying to a lot of people, there's been this rush to call something the new Game of Thrones, either, you know, House of Dragons, like they tried to apply to that, you know, or the new show on Disney Plus, Shogun, which is currently unfolding. But this week, the actual creators of the original Game of Thrones rolled out their first new series in 5 years. And I want you guys to hear this because there's not a dragon or a sword in sight.
Someone or something is targeting scientists.
They're going after our best and brightest. There's someone behind everything. You just have to dig.
So that is a clip of The Three-Body Problem. It's from the guys who created Game of Thrones, David Benioff and D.B. Weiss. It is based on the Chinese novel of the same name. Rad, I unfortunately falls to you, pal, to explain the complicated storyline of The Three-Body Problem. I know it's complicated, but can you just give us your best shot in terms of just setting up what this show is?
Yeah, I'll try and set it all up within the time span that you have allotted for this show.
All right,
I mean, look, go. So where do we begin? I mean, the show begins in 1966 China, right? We
yes.
meet a young woman whose family is being persecuted by the Maoist revolution. This is probably the most interesting or most compelling character in the series, where because she's witnessing her family being persecuted for believing or for promoting Western science.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow her story connects to a bunch of scientists in the modern day turning up dead. And then we meet a bunch of H&M model looking scientists who are then, you know, they're the ones, it falls on them to figure out, why are people dying? Why is this mysterious clock appearing in front of their eyes? Why are we getting communiques from outer space? Why is this virtual reality game really, really virtual, I guess? And what does this all have to do with the end of the world as we know it?
First of all, terrific job summarizing that show for such a sprawling plot, because it is three disparate stories that end up being connected. Okay, so when you kind of pull all these threads together, for you, does it add up to a satisfying show?
Not at all.
Oh, wow.
Okay. And like, look,
oh,
and,
wow. Four minutes into this conversation, I'm mad at you. Okay, continue.
Dude, you know.
Go off.
I'm mad at you, actually.
Okay, that's fair. I deserve that.
Because I was ready to call it quits after the first episode. Then I found out y'all wanted to talk about it. And then I had to go and put more hours into this just to figure out what's going on. So I got to the part, Alamin, where I get it. I see the Matrix now. I understand what's going on. That's how far I got into this show.
Okay.
And let me tell you, no, it is not any better. I mean, certainly certainly there is interesting science and ideas in this show that's adapted from the novel, but it's a bit like The Matrix, where there's a lot of withholding information kind of for the first bit, right? For the first four episodes, really. So, yeah. You know, like in The Matrix, I think I always found what was frustrating about The Matrix, is the first hour of it is like Morpheus going, "What is The Matrix? Who is The Matrix? What are you breathing? And just tell me what The Matrix is," right? And so imagine that for four episodes. But the difference is, you know, in The Matrix, you have Lawrence Fishburne and you have Keanu Reeves and you have Carrie Ann Moss, and they are playing these compelling characters. Whereas here, you have a cast that belongs on CSI Miami. And I, you know, like, and like, most of these characters are created for this show. And they're not interesting. I mean, the best thing that the Game of Thrones creators can come up with them in terms of building them as compelling characters is they all want to sleep with each other. And that's it. And sorry, that wasn't enough to hold me to the science.
You come to me on this day with this Benedict Wong slander, and I will absolutely not be having Benedict Wong slander on this day. Layla, listen, this is the first show that we got from David Benioff and D.B. Weiss since Game of Thrones. The expectations are high for them, right? Because like these are people who are kind of used to taking a project that people are like, this is unadaptable. Nobody can make this thing translate to the screen. That's what people thought about Game of Thrones. And then they were like, watch this. And they did it. And then they take this thing and they go, and a lot of people are like, I've read this book. It's not really an adaptable book into the screen. And they say, watch this. What kind of expectations do you think are placed on them and on the show? And do you think the show actually manages to meet those expectations?
I mean, yeah, sure. I mean, there's kind of an idea of like a handsome budget that's going to be in place and two like very, you know, compelling people. But yeah. I mean, this is not really a victory lap. This is kind of like a beg for forgiveness, I think, after like that final series of Game of Thrones that they put us
y'all
through.
Going in today. Okay. All right.
I don't know. I think like I get the whole kind of like challenge of like adapting the kind of unadaptable novel, the Wachowskis kind of gave it a go with. Cloud Atlas pool things recently was like considered like an unadaptable novel, but like watching this, I was just like, sometimes things just shouldn't be adapted. Sometimes like you just lose so much of it. And, you know, I am in agreement that I think all of this kind of earlier stuff that's, you know, in Maoist China is actually like very interesting. But you know, when you kind of watch something where it's kind of like the science is so complicated, but you get a sense that nobody making the show gets the science either. So it's like, it doesn't make you feel dumb. It makes kind of like the whole thing feel dumb.
Oh yeah. First of all, it's important to note that like the book was written by a scientist. Like the book was not a novelist who was like, let me just invent some science. It was a scientist who was like, let me write a novel. So as a result, a lot of the commentary that I've seen, I've not read the book, but a lot of the commentary that I've seen from people who have is like, the book is quite dense actually. And the show's attempts to cram in all the science is inelegant because the book is inelegant about the amount of science that is actually carried off in the text. Rad and Layla both talked about the treatment of Maoist China and how the story treats it. I think that's interesting, Cassie, because The Three-Body Problem has history, right? It's a 2008 Chinese sci-fi novel. Last year, you know, it got adapted into a TV series in China where the book is set. And then this Netflix version is like, no, what we're going to do is we're going to make it international. So instead of it being set in China, it's set sort of, you know, internationally. How do you think that impacts the storytelling? How do you think that impacts like what the show is trying to do?
Oh, I mean, I love that we whitewashed it. yeah, one of them is Latina, just to be accurate.
Yeah.
I don't know. Okay. First of all, I resent that we keep saying it's an unadaptable novel when it has been very successfully adapted just last year by Chinese media.
It was thought to be unadaptable until like these recent adaptations, I think, because it is like an ambitious project. But yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
You're totally right.
But like, we don't have to credit Columbus. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's already been covered and it's been done well.
Okay. Got it.
The Chinese adaptation is highly well rated and solves all of the problems that people are saying with this new Netflix series.
Sure.
But also like, yeah, I think, you know, I did think that the Cultural Revolution timeline story was like interesting in that we don't usually get to see that stuff on television. And I think with, you know, the broadening of adapting international like IP, we get to see things like that that we don't normally see in Western media. However, I thought it was very cartoony. Mm-hmm. I thought that it was very, given that there's no context in the Western world really of what the Cultural Revolution even was about, other than like communists bad, it was treated, I think, very politically flippantly and given no context. And then when you strip the rest of the show from its Chinese context, it gives even less. You just like every 15 minutes get to watch a little scene about how communists are bad with no other context greater. And then it also removes, I think, the rest of the show from that timeline, because none of it has any impact in like how that society moved forward.
I have to be the brave one in this panel and just come out and be like, I like the three body problem. I'm the one guy. Like, what's amazing is like you guys have all found reasons to be like, I don't know about this show, Elamine, and I'm the guy who's like, I actually think it's pretty good. I mean, like, look, here's what I'll tell you about my experience so far with the show. I think like the opening scene is an expertly done opening sequence that was like really compelling, and it pulls you in. I do think like when they're talking science, my brain goes science, 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 science. Like, there's no, it's not like it's too dense for it to be like useful to the plot. So like my brain kind of glazes over, and I go, oh, this is like a mechanism to get to the next part of the story. So I'm not as engaged by the amount of science that is like being thrown at me. But I do find like the story mechanisms in this thing quite engaging, Rad. And I think like the other thing that is really working for me is that I feel like I'm watching Lost, but I'm watching Lost on like 1.5 speed, you know? Uh-huh. Like in the sense of just like everything is very accelerated. The problems of Lost is that like this is a great story to tell in 8 episodes, and then they were like, we have 24, so that's a real problem. And there is like there's just a lot of mystery boxes being thrown at you as you watch the three body problem, and I'm a mystery box kind of guy, you know? Like, honestly, by the end of the first episode, I was like, oh, this could be the end of a whole season if you were making this show 10 years ago. That's how much is being thrown at you in terms of like the amount of plotting that is happening. We should say David Benioff and D.B. Weiss are getting a lot of the credit because like they are the two names that, you know, created Game of Thrones. But like they're not the only creators of this. Alexander Wu is the third creator of this. And people are talking about, hey, it's from the guys who created Game of Thrones, and that's fair. But also Alexander Wu he's created successful TV shows in his own right, and he is one of the three creators on this. But when you think about Game of Thrones and you think about this show, Rad, do you go, there's like a natural through line between why you'd want to make this thing next after making Game of Thrones?
Well, yeah, but I mean, bear in mind, I'm someone who only glancingly watched Game of Thrones.
Sure.
Like, I saw it, I was like, oh, lots of sensationalism and rapey vibes. Let's move on. Right? And so that's as much as I watched Game of Thrones. And so I saw that, and then I saw the same two creators. They were, when they wanted to create that other show that ended up never being made. The one about called?
They were going to make a show for HBO, and it was going to be like, what if slavery never ended? And then
exactly.
People were like, what if two white guys didn't make the show? And then they didn't make that show. Yeah,
exactly. So alternate reality where we still live in slavery, and people think about this as like, okay, so you want to make slavery fanfic, I think is what Roxane Gay described it as, right? By two white guys who didn't do a very good job, you know, even with diversity in this and in Game of Thrones, which is set in the fantasy world, right? So, but I mean, like, so then, you know, seeing that and then seeing their approach to this, where they take a novel set in China, but then bring it to, again, the H&M models in Britain, and, you know, like that, I mean, that sort of kind of entitlement and lack of kind of engagement with the characters and the context of the story, it totally tracks, I think, right? It makes sense.
Models catching stray this morning. I love it. Love to see it. Go ahead, Cassie.
I think that they're hotter than H&M models. I do want to give them credit. I think that especially the one woman who has the Kim Kardashian lips, I think she's gorgeous.
The least compelling character.
Of course. But every time she comes on screen, I'm like, oh, we're in a Dior perfume commercial.
My vocabulary for model, I don't know how to grade them appropriately. I'm sorry.
I did not realize that my three body problem was going to be the three of you. But I love that for me. Thank you.
Think of your favorite one-hit wonder.
Or that overpriced toy your parents would never let you have.
Or that TV show that no one else remembers because it was canceled way too soon. Now what if we could fix it? I'm Francesca Ramsey.
And I'm DeLon Grant. And after 20 years of friendship, we are now hosting a new nostalgia podcast called Let Me Fix It.
Each episode, we'll dig into our favorite celebrities, shows, and brands of yesteryear, and then imagine what it would take to repackage them for relevance today.
Think of our show as an intervention, but with way less stakes.
So subscribe to Let Me Fix It wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
My name is Alameen Abdul-Mahmood, and you are listening to Commotion. My guests today are Rad Simon Pillay, comedy writer Cassie Cao, and culture reporter Layla Latif. Okay, we're going to move on from the world of the three-body problem and into the world of comedy, where right now, all eyes are on this guy.
I'm done apologizing. I'm done saying that we're peaceful. For 20 years, we've had to prove to people that we're safe, right? Every time you turn on CNN, there's like some Arab dude talking about how Islam means peace. You know that guy? But he's always shouting it. He's always like, "We come in peace." You're like, "Bro, that's the slogan for aliens."
I can't actually get through without laughing. That's Rami Youssef. He's got a new special, a new comedy special debuting on Crave this week. It's called More Feelings. It's a follow-up to his 2019 special, which is called Feelings. Right now, it kind of feels like Rami is everywhere. We should say he was in the Oscar-winning movie Poor Things. He'll be hosting SNL next weekend. He directed an episode of The Bear last season. Cassie, I'm curious to get your perspective on, you know, as a comic yourself, what makes Rami such a compelling figure in the world of comedy?
I really like Rami. I'm obviously not his prime demographic for his audience, but I really appreciate how authentic he is. And I think as a figure in the industry, I find him really compelling because, yeah. As you know, a lot of comics will get a break. I mean, everybody at some point will get some kind of break, and what most people do, and like no shame to them, mm-hmm. they'll just try to spin that into higher opportunities for themselves and move themselves higher up the ladder.
Yeah.
Kind of like this is the best that can happen to you in this entertainment industry. And I think similar to how genuine his comedy is and genuine around building, you know, community around the Arab community, especially in the Western world,
yeah.
He's done a lot of good for my Arab friends who are Arab comedians,
yeah.
who even in Canada, like a lot of us are stuck here with no work visas and can't get opportunities in the States. And he's like personally given a lot of really great opportunities on TV and on really big stages for like my friends up here. He's really interested, it seems like, in building up a local talent and not just like moving himself up higher the Hollywood A-list, you know, like ladder, but building up the community from the ground up. And I also think audiences can see that kind of intention. And I think it's really compelling and refreshing.
Yeah, Layla, like, I'm interested in Rami for that perspective, right? The idea that, like, here is this guy who absolutely can follow the playbooks of, you know, comedians who get an opportunity from an underrepresented group. And, you know, Hollywood tends to go, there can only be one. And Rami's like, that's not really for me. Like, that is not the approach that I want to take. And his comedy, I think, can be challenging to a lot of new audiences. He's not attempting to be palatable. He is very tentative. He's someone who, like, thinks through things, does not land on conclusions, I think, kind of intentionally. When you make of Rami sort of arriving at this moment, do you think, like, he's a natural fit to become, like, the comedian of the moment? Because to me, I think, like, there's something about him that would go, like, oh, he's not a natural fit for this, but I'm so happy that he's getting this moment.
I don't think he's necessarily like a natural fit for the moment, but I think sometimes, you know, anybody from like marginalized communities does have a little bit of a pressure to sort of like, I suppose, like make themselves as like palatable to the white gaze, I suppose you call it, as much as possible. And like you see that in so many people's work where you're almost like, you feel like they're trying to confirm the suspicions that other people have about them. And, you know, a lot of like comedy, you know, Koff, Camille and Johnny Koff, does seem to come down to like, oh yeah, look, we are like a kind of objects of ridicule and stuff. So like for somebody to actually present their lived experiences, their feelings, their like whole humanity and being like, I'm not going to kind of make this small for you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm here. I don't think this is weird. I don't find faith weird. I don't find my community weird. And we're like fully three-dimensional people and funny stuff happens. Like, I think it's a gorgeous thing and kind of a revolutionary thing.
And particularly the idea of the faith, the idea of like that, the way that he uses faith in his comedy. You want to talk a little bit about that? Because I don't think we've seen a comedian like Rami in terms of the way that he plays with faith.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, arguably it's something that like Larry David's been doing in terms of like Judaism. But I think that like there has been this funny, this thing where like Islam is like considered to be like a deeply unfunny religion, like because there's kind of so much kind of, I don't know, pressure around it, so much like Islamophobia in the world, and not saying that anti-Semitism isn't a problem, but it just is like, you know, like nobody thinks of it as being kind of like a ripe opportunity to like have some fun unless you're mocking it.
Right.
And I think that's what's so interesting about him. He can like hold this stuff to have like its moments of absurdity without kind of, you know, insulting it. And I, yeah.
Right. I do think it's interesting that like Rami right now is finding all the success with the war in Gaza happening and the tensions surrounding Muslim communities are back to like what I would say are like close to 9/11 levels, like post 9/11 levels. Talk to me about the significance of having this guy be the guy who has the spotlight in this particular moment.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting how he owns this moment as kind of one of the only visible Muslims from that region in this space, in the Hollywood space. I mean, he was at the Oscars wearing his ceasefire pin and speaking on it on the red carpet, and one of the few to do anything like that. And, you know, when you look at his comedy, I mean, there's something about Rami that I think where like just being in the position that he's in, existence is resistance, right? Just on those terms, like he doesn't even have to do much right now to be kind of in this kind of loaded moment. And what I love about him is like, you know, I think a lot of comedy nowadays is very combative, right? Like people are making arguments and stuff like that. That's how comedy goes. And in this moment with God, the Israel-Hamas conflict and what's going on in Gaza, we are in a combative state right now, right? People are not seeing each other. So what I love about Rami is that he is laid back. This show, he was raising money for humanitarian aid for Gaza. So he does talk about these kind of experiences and how people come to him with questions about Hamas and stuff, but he doesn't do it in a combative way. He's acknowledging these issues, but then also then just bringing it back home. It's like, this is just how I experience things. And in a way, like instead of posing arguments and arguing for a cause, he's just inviting people to see him as a human and to see the kind of empathy that right now we're just not seeing a lot of in Hollywood. So right. I think the way he's owning this space is really interesting.
So I literally have only like a couple of minutes left, but I want to move on to a slightly different kind of faith-based entertainment.
Please help me. We have to leave.
Okay, so that is a clip from this new horror movie called Immaculate. It stars Hollywood Sydney Sweeney as a nun in an Italian convent who mysteriously becomes pregnant, and then all hell breaks loose. Look, all the reviews I've seen have been like, I don't know if Immaculate is the one, but then I happen to have with me a bunch of Immaculate truthers, let's say. Rad, you wrote a review for The Guardian where you were like, actually, Immaculate slaps. Immaculate truly goes. 30 seconds to you, why are you like this?
It's on brand, isn't it?
Like, it truly is.
Listen. I call it a reaction to me being tired of the oppressive, overly serious, elevated trend in horror, where I just want a movie that'll rip people's guts apart and kind of live in the gallows of it and be as blasphemous as possible while still, you know, acknowledging the influences of Rosemary's Baby and, you know, speaking to this moment in terms of having a My Body, My Choice narrative, but also... Speaking to this moment in terms of Sydney Sweeney's stardom, where, you know, you guys already had a conversation about how people like to impose meaning on Sydney Sweeney's body. Yeah. Well, here's a movie where Sydney Sweeney, you know, is once again playing someone where the patriarchy is trying to impose meaning on her body. And she's like, enough of that.
Right.
And I think that makes this movie even more visceral.
Layla, again, you are also a card carrying member of like Team Immaculate. What's going on there? Why did you like the movie?
Because I'm fun. Oh, yeah. I mean, like, not to kind of, like, we don't have much time, so not to rattle off a kind of Stefan from SNL style list, but it's got everything. It's got nuns. Mm-hmm. It's got nudity for no reason. It's got flashback to childhood trauma. It's got faces exploding. It's got schemes. Lots of schemes going on in this nunnery. Like, what's not to like? And it's sub 90 minutes. I mean, joy. I like this because I have taste and I like enjoying my life.
Cassie, last word to you on this. How do you feel about Immaculate?
I loved it. It had so many good jump scares. I genuinely had such a good time. If you're going on a date this weekend, you have to go because there's so many good opportunities to try to hold your date's hand. If you mess up one, don't worry. There's another 89 minutes of them.
I love the three of you as a collective because we're coming in here, the three body problem, acclaimed series. You're all like, wow, we hate it. We're coming in here, Immaculate, widely panned. You're like, we love this. More of this. Rats on Play, Cassie Cow, Layla Latif. Thank you for your time. You guys are the best. Thank you so much for this.
Thank you. That's why we're called Commotion, by the way.
I love to see it. I truly love to see the chaos. Thank you, guys. I really appreciate it. Those are my guests. Rod Semple is a film critic here in Toronto. Cassie Cow is a comedian, a TV writer, also here in Toronto. And over in London, England, Layla Latif, a contributing editor and columnist for Total Film. That is it for the show today, but listen, I'm going to be back on Sunday. Why Sunday, you ask? Well, because it's the Junos. Me and my pal Tom Power are going to be in Halifax. We are hosting the special live broadcast of the awards show, so you can catch us right here on CBC Radio 1 or CBC Listen. The Junos are also going to be streamed live on CBC TV, CBC Gem, CBC Music. It's 8 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Atlantic this Sunday. That is it for the show. Listen, I'm going to see you Sunday. We're going to hang out then.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.